Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Well, hello, everyone. I am so glad that you joined us today. We're going to take your calls, 1-800-229-3000. And by we, I mean me, Chris Williams, and Dr. Jackie Mack Harris. And, you know, we'd love to hear the wisdom of our co-host. Jackie, what's on your mind today?
Launching adult children.
Well, it's a great thing to talk
right?
about.
Right? I have... two daughters who have already launched, and one is, actually they're both married, and one is in the process of buying a house. And I'm feeling the stress just like I did when she got married, just like I did when she had her first kid and her second kid. She was overseas. And so even though she's a grown woman, like we are not contributing anything to this house buy other than moral support, it's such a big undertaking. Mm. And so I'm starting to feel that worry for her. And so I had to, and my husband too, we've wanted to put ourselves in a position to be helpful, to be an ear for them, answer questions, because this is their first time around and we've done it before, but at the same time, not make any of the decisions for them.
Yeah.
My husband said, I do not want her to one day wake up and hate the location she chose and blame it on me. So I don't want to have any input. And so just thinking about the importance and the value of our relationships with our children as they become adults, they still need our input. Mm-hmm. But it's such a balancing act to be there and be supportive for this adult who is doing something big and scary. So they still turn into your little girl or your little boy because it's still big and scary. But this is a big adult decision. Mm-hmm. And she has her own family and all those things. And so just thinking about what it is to really launch an adult. And now she's a decade older. You know, she first launched into leaving and going and getting married. And now a decade later, they're buying a home. And I still feel the same trepidation I did when she took off in the car for the first time after she got her driver's license.
And so what do you do with that, Jackie? Like, what do you do with the feelings and the urge to tell her what to do?
I give it to God. I will pray as the recovering emotional avoider in our family. I have to be really intentional about experiencing my emotions. And so I'll let myself sit and reflect and think about what am I feeling right now and why am I feeling that? And what I've ended up doing is me and my husband talk it out. So we have the conversation about what we're feeling, but we don't want to put that on her. And at the same time, I want to be there and be supportive for her. So I'm curious. I'm asking questions about, well, what do you want? And she's been curious with her kids. And so I'm asking them, well, what did you like about that house? What did you like about this one? Rather than giving my own input, I have a favorite.
Yeah.
And I have ideas about what I think they should choose. Mm-hmm. But they have to choose what's best for them and for their family.
Yeah.
I let myself feel the feelings and talk it out with my husband and pray about it. And I pray God is there with her, helping her make the best decision. And I trust that he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really good. I think I'm going to be going to you guys because, you know, I'm not there yet, but it's coming. But I could already feel it inside of me. Yeah. And so what I feel inside of me is this anticipation of what is going to be grief, a loss, but also an anticipation of this reminder that if I want to do this well, strengthen the marriage and live your own life.
Yes. Because that is what they are living in.
Yes.
That's what they're swimming around in right now. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, we hear so many heartbreak stories about disconnected families, disconnected children from their parents. And there's lots of reasons for that. But it is that reminder of, if at all possible, live at peace.
That's good.
It's going to require you keeping your mouth shut sometimes.
Yes.
But we don't want you to keep your mouth shut with us. Give us a call, 1-800-229-3000. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment.
According to the latest U.S. Census, there are 95.7 million single adults in America. This constitutes a large and growing portion of our society, yet a portion that's often overlooked in the area of spiritual care. So if you're a single adult, I'd like to speak to you. You may be single by choice or as a result of unfortunate circumstances. You may have future plans to marry, or you may sense God calling you to a life of singleness. No matter what the situation, God's will for you right now is to be satisfied in Him and to trust His plan for you at this time in your life. So how will you respond to your singleness? What will you learn from it? How will you survive the temptations unique to your situation in our world today? Come visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com if you'd like support. And thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
We always love to hear from Steve, and he is coming back. It's like Resurrection Day. He's been on sabbatical for a couple of months, and we're so grateful that he's had this time. And so we're looking forward to him coming back. But isn't it interesting, because even whether you're single or you're a parent, or, you know, the things that he was just talking about, we really have to work on ourselves. That's what we're talking about here with parenting and singlehood. New Life's been around for 35 years, helping people in all of life's hardest places and a lot of good places too. So we're grateful to be here, and we're grateful for Steve leading the way. We're going to go back to the calls, and we're going to start with Anita, who is calling us from Orlando, and she has a question for us. Hi, Anita. Thanks for calling, and thanks for waiting. How can we help you?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a problem with my thoughts, and I'm going to give you just two examples. And what I would like is my question would be, why do I have these negative thoughts of myself and things that I did or didn't do, and why does it happen, and how can I change that? My examples are like this. My mom died last year. I took care of her for a long time. Everyone said I was an exemplary daughter. But all I can think is the times that I didn't do what I was supposed to, or maybe I didn't say what I was supposed to say. And all of that makes me sad, because I know that for like 10, 15, 20 years, I took care of her and I did great, but everything is just like, why couldn't I have done this better? Why couldn't I have done this other thing? The same thing happened, my aunt died recently too, and only one thing I could think of is just the one time that I didn't give her the right instructions to go the way that she was supposed to. I mean, everything else was good. In that night time, I go to sleep, and all I think is about the things that I did wrong during the day. Or if I start thinking of good stuff, like I'm in a park, I'm having a good time, those are the thoughts I try to think. Then all of a sudden, like some dog or some animal would come and attack me, or some man would come out of the bushes. Some always turns out negative. I read the Bible, I pray, and I listen to music, Christian music. But I just don't seem to be able to get out of this, and I don't know if stress has to do with it, or it's just
okay.
Hey, Anita, can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with your dad?
Well, it was fine. I mean, we were like, my dad worked. And, he kept to himself, but, I didn't have any problems. We weren't like buddies.
Not a whole lot of conflict, but not close either, right?
No. Well, yeah, he wasn't close to, like, what I remember of him is he would tell us stories when we were little, before we went to bed.
Yeah.
And, but I didn't have a bad relationship with my dad.
That's great. No. Yeah, yeah. And then, because here's what I'm fishing for. Let me just get right to the point. There is something inside of you at the very core, meaning it's probably below your chin. It's probably between your chin and your belly button, in your core, that is what we call a core belief, that you are not enough. You're not good enough.
That's correct.
Okay. That came from somewhere. Now, what that does, what that core belief does, is then it creates a view, a point of view, a vision, a field of vision, that is exactly what you're looking for. It's a confirmation bias. And so it's sort of like you're not okay unless you're not good enough.
I wonder whose voice is giving you those negative comments and those negative thoughts. Is it your voice, your mom's voice, auntie's voice?
I don't know.
What was your relationship with your mom like beyond being her caregiver?
My mom was very strict when we were little. We grew up on church. It was very legalistic.
There you go. That's it. That's enough. That's it right there. Yeah. There you go. So you
everything was to the point where I just drift away from the church. I didn't want to have to go back.
Because you could never be good enough, right?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. So, I don't know if that did, but I mean, that's one of the things, I guess.
So it sounds like you grew up with a voice that gave you negative feedback. And, you know, some of us grew up being told what we were doing wrong rather than what we were doing right, because that's all our parents knew. They were doing their best to help us be successful. The problem with that is then our brain got conditioned to looking for that negative information to be true. And our brain is designed to prove us right. So if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're correct. So the reticular activating system is the part of the brain that will show you evidence of what you think is true. So if you think, I just can't have a good day, something bad always happens to me. Even if you're walking in a beautiful park on a lovely day and you're the only one there, you're going to trip and fall because your brain is looking for you to prove that you can't have a good day at the park today. Or like you said, a dog is going to come out or some stranger is going to come up to you. So we have to change your thinking on purpose. So you're going to be efforting to think differently on purpose. And the thoughts that just fly through your mind that aren't true, you just call it the lie that it is, and then choose what your positive cognition or your the reality, the truth is. I'm a good daughter, and sometimes I make mistakes. I'm a good niece, and I took good care of my auntie. And yeah, that one time I gave her bad instructions. Forgive yourself for the mistakes that you've made. But this sounds so much more like shame. I'm guilty for the things that I do wrong or that I don't do that I know I should have done. Mm-hmm. Shame says I'm bad as a person. Like my being is bad. And so then I can never find the good. And I feel like that's what I'm hearing from you is no matter how good you are, there's so much shame. And coming out of a legalistic foundational church experience can really shape that idea of not good enough, never going to be good enough, never going to get everything right, so much so that it guides your life. And it sounds like that's where you are.
So, Chris, I know we need to give her some direction on how to capture those thoughts and do something with them.
Yeah, because in addition to what Jackie is saying, so, Anita, you don't just need to think differently. You also have something that's more challenging. You need to feel differently. Right? Because that feeling, that feeling in the center of your chest or in the core of your belly that tightens up and gets weighty and twisted, when that thing overtakes, it overtakes everything. It's a system overhaul, and it will tell you you're not good enough, and I'm going to give you all the reasons. I'm going to lawyer up right now and give you all the reasons why you're not. The other thing that it does is it traps us from being okay. Now, a lot of people will say, hey, you've got to learn to be okay not being okay. And I'm like, that might be the first step. But listen, the real step is learning to be okay being okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in addition to capturing your own thoughts, to being aware of them and working with them to shift them, you also need to be in healthy relationship. Because in your environment, you got mirrored back to you that you're a dirty sinner and never going to be good enough. And in fact, that's where, ironically, we build this false sense of safety. That's why there's this default system that goes there. But what you need mirrored back to you is that, oh, Anita, you are wonderfully and beautifully made. And here's all of the reasons why that is. And so getting into like a life recovery group, it sounds like you'd be a great candidate for getting into, adult children of dysfunctional homes or adult children of alcoholics, mm-hmm. even though there may not have been an alcoholic in your home.
Emotional freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And please sign up for emotional freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things that we discover, what you just said, Chris, and what you were talking about, Jackie, is we get comfortable with the wrong thoughts. Mm-hmm. Like that just becomes our background noise.
Yeah.
And when you recognize the belief, the core belief, I'm not enough, you replace that with the truth and you practice that, and you have to have other people around helping you do that. Anita, we are going to send you a copy of Dr. Dave Stoops' book, You Are What You Think, which talks about a lot of this. And Dave was such a wise man. And, we want you to live in freedom and to experience life to the full. We're so glad that you called, and hope that that was helpful for you. We'll get you connected with the Life Recovery Group, too. I think that was a great idea, Chris. We are going to talk with Carolyn, who's calling us from Chester, Pennsylvania, watches us on YouTube. And we are happy for our YouTube audience there. If you're there, click that like button and subscribe. It helps get the word out to so many people. But right now, it's all about you, Carolyn. We want to talk to you. How can we help you today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about basically my adult children. They're well over the age, of 20. They're like in their 30s now and up. And, I give them good advice, but they make their own decisions, and I realize that. But when they get in trouble and then they run back to me for the fix of it. And my whole thing is, I get stressed out, I get angry. Number one, maybe because they didn't heed what, I told you so kind of a thing. And then sometimes even if they don't call me for the bailout, just knowing that they're getting themselves into trouble and stresses me out. Now, I don't know how to balance whereas I don't help them, I know God wants me to live at peace and not be angry all the time, like road rage all the time about what's going on. And he's drawing me to a life of peace and happiness. But this drama that happens is just, and I don't know balance. I don't know when to say no. I don't know what God, I get guilt if I don't get involved, and I get a lot of anger, and I just don't know what to do about me, about me.
It sounds like you could use some support in navigating some of that anxiety, that rage may be coming from the anxiety that you feel around everybody else's stuff that you have no control over.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you a little history. I grew up, my mother died
when
I was young.
Carolyn, hold on, because you can hear the music, and we're going to have to take a break, and I want to hear all that you have to say.
Okay.
So hold that thought, and we'll get more on the other side of that. But you're asking the right questions. You are identifying the feelings. I mean, that's something that we tell people all the time. It's like, how are you feeling? What are you thinking about? And that's half the battle, but what do you do with that information? That's on the other side of that growth process. We're going to be right back after this break, and we're going to take more calls. We've got some on hold. There's always something that we're dealing with. And, we've been helping people for about 35 years or more, just trying to get through it. We'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are taking calls 1-800-229-3000, but right now we are talking with Carolyn, who is in relationship with her adult kids, which can be fun and exciting all at the same time. Carolyn, you were going to tell us a little bit of the background.
Yeah, my mother died when she was young. We didn't have a father in the house, and my grandmother, who kind of raised us, was in her senior life. So there was this big gap. So me and my siblings actually kind of grew ourselves up. So don't have any reference of what a mother would do or a father would do. And in our life, you better not make too many mistakes because you didn't have anyone to call on for help.
Right.
And if you did make it, you had to take care of yourself. So for having, to have the kids keep calling me, I just don't know what to do. I don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is really hard. I was sharing earlier about my adult daughters, and they're making great choices. However, it's still hard and scary when they're making those choices. My husband and I had a conversation a couple of years ago where we realized because we struggled so growing up, our parents struggled, so of course we did. We worked really hard to eliminate some of that struggle for our kids. So our kids didn't grow up in the hood like we did. Our kids didn't go without like we did in some ways. They didn't have to deal with, all the things that we dealt with growing up. But then we also added to that, since we were doing better, they didn't have to, work as hard. My older, she was always a go-getter. She's going to collect bottles and do whatever she needs to do, sell brownies to make it. The younger one, we kind of coddled a little bit more. And so it was surprising to me to wake up at her being 27 years old and realize that I hadn't let her stand on her own two feet. I didn't see myself as a helicopter parent, but I had helicoptered her, which just leaves a kid feeling like they can't make it without you. They can't make choices on their own. They can't do it. And so it was important for me to take a step back and to let her, to hear her on the phone saying, I got a flat. And for me to be like, wow, do you have AAA?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to need AAA.
Mm-hmm.
When really all I wanted to do was Cash App her some money so she could go get a new tire.
Yeah.
But I can't keep doing that for the entirety of her life. And now she's married and her husband doesn't want us doing that either.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when they're struggling, they are now at a place where they're not calling us every week for something. And it had to start with us saying no. But our relationship with our kids is such that they know our love and our care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it hasn't come across to them like we're not there for them. We have told them why we've taken a step back. I've had this conversation with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea that I think I might have crippled you in some ways.
Yeah.
Right.
Chris?
And that's true. But on my end, there's this guilt that it's all in my head about how I feel about saying no. Is this the right time to say no? Is it the right time to say yes? How far? The boundaries in which a mother oversteps it. You know what I'm saying? I'm asking God to please help me with this because it's ruining the peace and joy that God is giving me in my life.
Yeah, you're living all of their anxiety out.
So Carolyn, hear that. So I'm going to tell you one of my favorite prayers. I had this incident. It was really crazy. And I'll get around to it, but stick with me just for a second. I walked out of my house one morning, and my wife and two boys had already flown to Colorado. I had to stay back and do a therapeutic intensive for a couple days with a couple. I walk out of my house, and both of my vehicles are not there. My wife's car is gone. My car is gone. Like, they just aren't there. And I'm like, oh, maybe I parked them in the alley. Went back to the alley. Nothing. Nothing there. I get to the front, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. I end up, like, asking my neighbor. He comes out and run into him, and he's like, I have no idea. I call the police. The police come. They show up. They're saying, yes, there has been a rash of stolen cars. And to my own detriment, I left a set of my wife's keys in my car, so they got a 2-for-1 deal.
Mm.
there was nothing I could do in that moment. It was pure helplessness. And my prayer was this, not, God, I have a problem. I said, God, you've got a problem. I said, God, your problem is me. And I'm curious how you're going to work this out. And I think that that's what we're missing is we, and I'm with you, Carolyn. I mean, part of the struggle of therapy is we're always figuring out what the parents did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But what that does is it sets up the parent as God and eliminates the need for God.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the struggle, no one gets out of the struggle free. That doesn't exist on this. We have this subtlety of entitlement, of a suffer-free life, and it just doesn't represent reality. And so in that, I'm just asking myself, I think first, and others as parents to take ourselves off the throne of God and let our children figure it out and figure it out with God.
And wrestle those guilt feelings to the ground, because you're not doing anything wrong just because you feel guilty. And determining whether you're guilty or not is, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and you need to sit with other people along those, you know, that are, you know, journeying in the parenting role as you are. But you do want to continue to release. So if they're in trouble, do what Jackie said, you know, throw it back. What are you going to do with that? I'm going to send you a copy of Dr. Jim Burns' Doing Life with Your Adult Children. We'll be right back after this. Thanks, Carolyn.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope, and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are so grateful for all of you who have joined in the matching gift campaign and are giving to complete this match as quickly as possible so that the money can be used for ministry and helping people. And I want you to be part of that too, because you are changing people's lives when you give to New Life Ministries. And every dollar that you give will be doubled up till we meet the match of $400,000. And you can do this by going to newlife.com/donate. You can call us 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or you can text the word match to 28950. I know that you want to be part of giving to the ministry that is giving to so many. It's, you know, you're hearing free advice. You've got connections with counselors all across the country. We just want to be able to continue to offer and fulfill this match. And I'm grateful for all of you who have participated in the match. Now we're going to go back to the calls, and we are going to talk with Katie, who's calling us from St. Louis, Missouri. And I think she heard Chris talking about, it was the Bermuda Triangle, but I don't think it was the Bermuda Triangle.
Not the real Bermuda.
Katie, how can we help you? We're so glad that you called.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for doing what you do. The only question that I had is, Chris had brought up, he was talking about core values, and he said the four core values, and I was really interested in the four core values and wondering where I could find those so I could apply them.
Well, Katie, you're asking a great question. The four core values, I think it was on a previous show that I was referencing, is something that we as an organization in my counseling practice and in group have identified as guiding principles for our work and for who we want to be and for our culture. And I'm just a big believer that each of us need to work out what those are. You know, and because our, you know, to kind of get into the weeds a little bit about that, you know, our mission is to create a confident, secure world through mental, emotional, by empowering people to discover mental, emotional, and relational health. But we understand that there are some values that we're going to need that guide us to get us there. And so ours is embracing authentic love, engaging in courageous truth, participating in genuine humility, and then the last one is commitment to lifelong resilient growth. And so those are the four things that are going to guide us to get us to our mission, that are going to make our mission possible. You know, my wife and I spent time doing this in our own home, and they're actually on our wall. And it just takes time to say, like, what are we going for in life? What's our objective? You know, to glorify God and bring forth His love and healing in the world. Maybe that's it. Okay, now we're going to identify what are the things, what are the values that we need to get us there? You know?
You know, Chris, I also want you to speak to that process, too, because, Katie, if you are taking notes, those values may align with yours, but they may not be exactly the same. And I think that's what you're talking about, Chris, is that process.
Well, the process was long. I mean, speaking for both Ember and I and the organization and in my practice, Renovare Counseling, we started probably with 31, and it was just eliminate until we got down to the core four that made the final cut, and then having to define those. And I call it a living document, meaning that it's not written on the Ten Commandments stone. It's living in that the fact that different life circumstances and situations may require different things. Mm-hmm. But the core of it is this, is that we are guided by principles and values. Most of us, we've adopted them throughout our life through adaptation, i.e. family of origin.
Right. We've taken on somebody else's construct of what is valuable.
Yeah, you know. And so being right all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck being in relationship all the time if that's your core value, right?
Right?
And so this is an intentional process to really mine down to what do I really believe and what is guiding my life that aligns with God's will more accurately.
We
and you know what's
interesting?
Thing. Well, but before you go there, what's interesting that is that there are many people who are believers. You just said, Chris, that, you know, God's will. We don't even pay attention to our behaviors that don't align with God's will a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
Now, go ahead, Jackie.
We do the same thing at my practice. We work from a list of values, and the one that always pops up for me is freedom, because that's my top core value. And so I, you know, the verse that it's for freedom that we're set free is everything to me. And so I'm not willing to be imprisoned in somebody else's expectations or beliefs about me. I won't, because I'm free in Christ. And so I have to bring that into my work as a therapist as well, and I offer that same freedom to everybody else, that freedom of choosing how you want to work and what matters to you. And so, Katie, you were asking what the four core values were so that you can implement them in your life. And I think the main value is that you do a values assessment for yourself. The first thing you need to implement is figuring out what you value. And there are values assessments that are available. I use one on a website called therapistaid.com, but there are others out there. And basically, you Google for a list of values and then do like Chris said. You take those values, you look at them, and you just by process of elimination. If I could only keep four, in my case, it's eight. But if I could only keep eight, which eight would I keep? And then I order those.
Well, and I'm thinking too, Katie, we can connect you with a life coach because a coach can absolutely help you through that process.
That's what my daughter does for us. That's how we began to do the values assessment. Mm-hmm. She does values assessments, and then we take those family values because we do family life coaching, and they take those values that the family comes up with in their session and create a family playbook because we need a strategy. Yeah. We need a strategic plan and a vision for our families to say when we need for our organizations.
That's right. We're not on autopilot. You know, Chris, I want you to talk about, I know it wasn't the Bermuda Triangle that you were talking about, but since I mentioned it, would you please just do a few, you know, just talk about that triangle,
triangle. When we get into conflicted or oftentimes pained relationships. And to be honest, the most pained relationship we can get into is the one with ourselves. And when we fall down a trap where we're feeling stuck and trapped, a helpless, hopeless place, we adopt what I refer to as a victim state. And the victim state might be there because we legitimately have been victimized by harm by other people or the world around us. But the problem with the victim state is it then aligns in a triangle, what they call triangulation, of three possible positions. One position is the victim. That's always me. I'm going to self-identify as the victim. And you know, Jackie is a really, really successful therapist, and I want to be a successful therapist, but I don't believe I can get there. So she's going to be my rescuer. So the other position is a rescuer. But Jackie says, Chris, I love you. I care for you, but I just don't have time to do that. That's not what I do. Now she becomes my persecutor because she didn't meet my expectations. And those are the three positions, persecutor, rescuer, and victim. The problem with this is healthy relationship cannot exist there. That's why I call it the Bermuda Triangle of relational death, because no healthy relationship comes out of it alive. Mm. We have to – and the alternative to where we find ourselves in a victim state is to reconnect, is to find healthy connection, and the ultimate thing is creativity, you know. And this goes back to, and I'll address this with our adult children. The most important thing that we can do under the sun, if I could use, you know, Ecclesiastes, is really own and develop our own agency. And that's just a fancy word to say the ability to make something of ourselves and the world around us. Mm-hmm. A victim is looking for somebody else to make something of them and make something of their world around them.
I love that.
That external locus of control.
Exactly.
That's it.
And we're never going to get there if we're in the victim state. Yeah.
I love that. Katie, I hope that's helpful. I'm going to send you a copy of Laura Manja McDonald's book, How You Think Determines the Course of Your Life. It covers a lot of these elements, but also we're going to connect you with a life coach who can help you through a values assessment. You know, that's what coaching is all about, right? It's that forward thinking. Where do I want to go? How do I get there? And we love coaches, counselors, psychologists, pastors, people. We want you to be in a process to find the freedom that God died to give you. And I love your verse, Jackie. It is so true. When we know the truth, it will set us free. And sometimes we gotta realize we're operating out of a system that we're not even aware of many times. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, Chris and Jackie are our main speakers at our Emotional Freedom Workshop, and we are going to be online with that intensive on June 1st, and you can dive deep into the challenges that, you know, the places that you might be stuck, and you've heard their wisdom today. And I know spending a whole day with them, as well as with our facilitators who do the breakout groups, is going to be a great move for you. Connect with us online at newlife.com. You can look at all of the details about emotional freedom, as well as you can call us 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and we'll be glad to help you with that. We've got time for one more call, and we're going to talk with Margaret, who's calling us from Baltimore, listens on WAVA. Hello, Margaret. How can we help you today?
Yes, hello. Yes, I recently got married to a man who's 74, and I'm 72. And
congratulations.
We met, thank you. And we met in church in Bible study, and it's seem like, you know, we have a very good, solid foundation, and we've been very happy with each other for the last few years. We started to date, you know, about a year and a half ago, and I lost my husband back in 2020. So we started to date, and then realized, you know, how similar we thought about things, and we decided we'd like to get married. Well, my children, I have two grown daughters. One's, you know, 40, the other one's in her 30s. And my oldest daughter has some children. I have three grandchildren. Well, they weren't very happy when they heard that we were going out and that we wanted to get married. And they were against it from the beginning and, you know, tried to talk me out of it. And it just hasn't been very pleasant, you know. And I thought, you know, well, they would see how happy I was because I haven't been this happy in a long time. Well, it turns out that after we got married, it's just been, I could see that there were going to be problems, and I just didn't, I guess, realize how much it would be a problem. I thought with time, you know, things would change, you know, but it's gotten worse, and you know, they won't accept him, but he also, though, will not reach out to them. And I try to tell him the children, the grandchildren, need to, you know, you need to talk to them and reach out to them and show them that, you know, you're going to be part of the family. And he doesn't see it that way. He thinks it's all on them, you know, to talk with him. He says that they ignore him, which they do. But I think it's up to him to reach out first. And
well,
it's just not getting any easier.
Well, Margaret, it is a tough situation. Chris, let's start with you.
So, Margaret, the question for us is, what do I do with this situation?
Yes, I don't know what to do about it. Because
yeah.
I feel like I either have to give up my grandkids and not have them come around as much, or my daughters, you know, I just feel like I have to make a choice here, and I don't want to have to do that.
Well, to me, Margaret, it just seems to be that we're not talking about the thing. Like, there's a thing here going on. And no one's talking about the thing, which usually is this, the reason why we're not talking about the thing, because we're all afraid. So it all starts with this question. Uh-huh. It all starts with this question. For your husband, what are you afraid of? For your children, what are you afraid of?
You know? And what have they said that they're afraid of?
Well, the reason they didn't like him from the beginning is my one daughter looked into it, did a background check, and they said, well, you did that with us, you know, and when we were dating guys. And my daughter saw that he had an arrest record back in 2016, but he had a trial, and
Margaret, can I jump in here, only for time's sake mostly? But without having to get into all the details of that, what would be the issue of saying, like, man, I'm really concerned about this, and talking through the issue? Adults getting in the room and adults having adult conversations about adult situations.
Have you brought your daughters and spouses, if they have them, and your husband in together, and all of you sat down and had an honest conversation about what they're fearful of, why they don't like it?
We've never had this conversation all together, no.
And I think I'm in agreement with Chris. There's a lot of fear here, and we're not talking about the thing. We're not talking about the problem. If I were your husband, I wouldn't want to reach out to them either. They don't like me. And so it's going to be really hard for me to start to build a relationship with people who are telling me they don't want a relationship with me. I hear what you're saying,
right.
And I do think that he has some responsibility in forming the relationship, but I understand why he's not moving forward, because they've already said, we don't want you in our life. Right. I'm curious if they are fearful that he's going to take all your money, if they're fearful he's going to harm you, or if they just can't tolerate that you are moving on. And you mentioned being happier than you've ever been before. And so that makes me wonder, are you happier in this marriage than maybe they saw you in your previous marriage?
Oh, definitely. Yes, yes. They know what happened in my first marriage with their father, and they know how it was, and they know I'm happier now. They were afraid that my new husband was after my money, and I hate to say it, but they say they were just looking out for me, worried that I wouldn't have enough money left to take care of myself since he doesn't have a whole lot of money. But I mean, I think my one daughter especially is worried that she's not going to be able to get any money when I die. So they wanted me to, you know, go to the lawyers, which I did. I understood some of this, and I did take care of everything with a trust and a prenup and everything, you know.
Good for you, Margaret. Good for you.
That's really smart, Margaret. But what you're also telling me in the subtext of all of this, in your family, there exists a lot of control and a little bit of connection. And that's the problem, is the lack of connection to talk through the fears that, you know, like you said, I ran a background check on their people.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's a high level of control.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they're saying turnabout's fair game. But what about, and I think that this is where a family therapist, a family counselor could really, really help you guys, is to enter into saying the unsaid.
Yes.
Having conversations about what you're not having conversations about. Because that's because at the end of the day, where our fears tend to go is in control. But control is a drug. It offers a temporary relief to a more permanent problem. We're looking for security in the control. Ultimate security, as God designed it, is in healthy relationship. It's just harder work and a lot riskier, for sure, and requires more vulnerability.
Right.
But I would love for you to be, this situation, to be the beginning of greater connection for you and your family.
Yes, and I love that idea, Chris, about family therapists. We'll get you connected with somebody, Margaret, and we will send you a copy of Jim Burns' Doing Life with Your Adult Children. But we want you to call us back with the rest of that story of unification, that people are not afraid of each other and want to connect. We hope to connect with you. We're grateful that you called. Thanks, Jackie. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.